Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. It is Sunday morning, July 31st, 2011, and I am more than grateful you chose to be with me. If this was an accident, you might consider it a divine accident. Who knows? There's something here for you, and I guarantee you through some of the questions that have been given to me that I'm going to try to answer in a fairly intelligent way, you might find something very helpful. If you would like to know a little bit more about me, what I do, my efforts, please come to my website when you get a chance at aspire.org. That's A-S-P-I-R-E.org, O-R-G. Aspire. I hope you'll take some time to take a look at it and maybe peruse some of my old radio programs that are on there. And believe it or not, some of my future ones are there too. So you can get them all if you like. And please understand they are there to be of service to you in any way that is possible. And hopefully you'll find that to be very helpful. Let's go to the first question, okay, of the day. Now listen to this one. This is a dilly whopper. And when I say a dilly whopper, I mean a dilly whopper. I'm an alcoholic. I have been watching you for many years on television. Your new series, The Sound of One Hand Clapping, is so different. I find that I have an impulse to cheat or just get by. It is a very strong impulse. I'm looking for a way always to blame others so I can be what I am. Could I enter into the practice as you talk about it, your practice? And it's signed, James. James, this is a very difficult question to really answer. Most people can't enter into this practice when they're sober, much less if they have been drinking. But let's kind of go into it gently here. You say, I am an alcoholic. I admire you for admitting it. This is a very good step. Now, I am no expert at alcoholism. I've had people that I've been intimate with in my life who were alcoholics, come to find out. Some that were very, what shall we say, mean-spirited, and others that were, basically like you, avoiding. I've seen people, I've had students like this, over and over and over again, alcoholism, pot addiction, drug addiction, usually in that order, are very big with people in our culture and society. It's very difficult. It is extremely difficult for people who are on any kind of drug like alcohol, pot, or even just crack cocaine. I've even had that. Had students who did that. No matter what, you've got to get over your addiction. I can't help you when you're not available. The whole effort of a spiritual practice is to be available, to be there, to be able to be available for meditation, to be conscious, to be attentive. And if you're not attentive, if you're not conscious, if you're not available, I don't see how you can enter into this practice. And understand, it's not my practice. James, I didn't invent this. This is just a practice. My job as a teacher is to offer meditation, offer counseling in how to remove the blocks that would keep you from meditating deeper and deeper and deeper into more profound states. That's my job. I'm a coach in meditation. I try to help people who are seeking to awaken through meditation. And then what I try to do is just stand back and let them work at it. guide them and tell them, move a little bit here, move a little bit there. My counsel with people is not always the same. It depends on who you are, and yet it can sound very much the same. It can be all very confusing to a person. You say, I'm an alcoholic. I find that I have an impulse to cheat or just get by. Well, don't cheat and don't get by. Let me tell you what's at the core of all this, besides possibly your DNA. Now, I find that most alcoholics that I have encountered have a DNA issue. It's in your DNA to do it. You've got the wonderful gene for it. It's something your parents passed down to you, and I want you to understand that and not take it personally. It is true. But you've got to understand, until you are aware of your body, the DNA of it, you will always be subject to the impulses of it. Now, I'm subject to my impulses as a person and my DNA, and I have to work at it very diligently. And there are days when it is very hard not to get sucked into it and allow it to eat me up, as it were. And I'm sure you find the same thing in your life. I would suggest you go and get some help. I would strongly suggest you go to AA. Strongly. You might find a therapist you can deal with down in San Diego, someone who can help you understand the nature of your DNA, help you accept the nature of that DNA, and help you come to a place where you know the difference. You can sort out your impulses from your conscious living, your way you live more consciously. Now, if you can do that, if you're willing to do that, it will help you so very, very much. Now, you ask, you like blaming other people. You say, here, I know this well, all alcoholics, it's not my fault. I understand. Can I be in your practice, you ask me? Not yet. No, not yet. I have dry drunks in my group, people who don't drink anymore, but they still have that mentality of the alcoholic. And they go hither and yon with their practice. They're always at the beck and call of their instincts and their worries and their fantasies and their stories, and they're always looking to be the victim. And just that mentality alone, the ego's mentality, the victim mentality, is enough to keep you busy for a long, long time. And you would probably find it very difficult to meditate. No, this isn't the time for you. You have other things to conquer that are very important. You have to think of yourself like an athlete. You're getting ready to do the very best you can do. And you want to give your practice the very best you can give it. So you have to put aside some of the impulses and the tendencies you have so you can learn how to sit quietly with yourself, focus, discipline yourself, not worry about what your thoughts are thinking, not get caught up in your thoughts and think that your thoughts are more important than your life or who or what you really are. It is the ability you have to look beyond what you believe in and think and feel the essence of yourself, to live love and let love live you. This is going to take some practice. But to enter into the disciplines of meditation, based on where you are right now, it would be very difficult. And I think it would give you one more reason to drink. It would give you one more reason to give up on yourself. Because I noticed that alcoholics are typically very talented, very charming people. They have a wonderful way of fooling themselves and others, because that's what they have to do. Like you say here, you have the impulse to cheat, just get by, and blame other people. I understand this is typical. But you have to come to some place where that is no longer an issue for you, where you can just put it aside and understand it's probably always going to be there for the rest of your life, but you're not influenced by it. You don't have to be perfect to enter into a spiritual practice. You don't have to be perfect to be loved either. All you have to do is be available. You have to be able to sort out that which is from that which ain't. And if you can do that, then you're in a wonderful place. If you can't do that, you're not in a good enough place for you to have your attentions given fully to a practice. A spiritual practice, really, James, is about a certain level of devotion. Devotion to love, not devotion to impulse. So I share that with you. You can think about it, but I say go get some help. I'm not the person for you. You need a kind of help. You need a kind of blessing that can arrive and happen only when you are ready to give up the whole shebang and see the way. And it's going to be hard because most people try to combine their mind and their impulse together. Let me give you a little head start in something that most people don't do, and then I'll drop it for you. You have to come to a place where it's okay for you to be where you are in your impulses and your body, but not reacting to it. It's just got to be okay that it's there. It's like if you have a bald spot on the top of your head. It's got to be okay that the bald spot is there. You're going to have to learn to live with it as a way of being influenced more by your heart than by what you think other people think of as that little bald spot on the top of your head. Nobody really cares. It's all about love. I wish you well, James. Maybe we'll meet in this life. Maybe. Please forgive me. It's a tough thing to overcome. People say it's a disease. I do not feel it is. I think it's a DNA. It's not a disease. It's more than that. But that's another story. I wish him well. The next one's from a man named Sack. And the reason I know he's a man, he calls himself Mr. Sack, S-A-K. Okay? And I don't know where he lives. He said, where should compassion come from? I fear I have none. Sack. It's a good question. Where should compassion come from? Most people, Sack, are looking at compassion more as sympathy, from the eyes of sympathy. And when we're sympathetic, we start losing the meaning of our life very quickly. My symbiotic emotions about any given situation are very dangerous because as symbiotic as I can be, I can also be as cruel. No, compassion is much bigger. Compassion takes in the whole idea of oneness. Compassion is me recognizing I have the freedom to do to you whatever it is I want to do to you that justifies whatever it is I want to justify. And typically that has to be revenge of some kind. That's what I typically find. Compassion enters in when I realize that though I have the right to do that to you, quote unquote, if I do it, I not only hurt you, but I hurt someone else in this world somewhere. I hurt people in general, and I weaken my position to be able to focus my breath and my attention upon my breath for there to be love in my life. Real love. Not the love that you get from other people. That's not love. Real love is always there, Sack. It never goes away. It doesn't have some place here or some place over there. Real love is everywhere. So when I'm in relationship with a friend or a lover, I am not in that relationship to get love. I'm actually in that relationship to open my heart up. Not to just that person, but just to open my heart up to life itself. Relationships, friendships, With anything. It can be with your puppy. It can be with your cat. It can be with your canary. It can be with a fish. It can be with a friend. It can be with a lover. It can be with your family. It can be with anyone. If you can open up, then you start to see the bigger picture, and you see that these people were only a device to help you recognize the bigger picture of love. Compassion is love. The flow of love in my life. It is the conduit of everything that is meaningful. I start looking at people not from the point of view of moral shoulds or should nots. When I am in compassion, I see the bigger picture. And I'm not much interested in what I believe in and what I want and what I have and what I think. I'm not much interested in that at all. I am interested in that which moves me closer and closer and closer to love. Now, if my compassion does not exceed my desires, if my compassion does not exceed my sympathetic bond to another person or to myself, then it remains stagnant and it will be nothing but sympathy. Sympathy is a form of pity, and it's an egotistical thing. It's one of the things that those who have spiritual egos deeply pride themselves on. And they love that. They absolutely love how sympathetic they are towards people who just don't understand. And that's the way they live their life. I say to you, go further, go deeper, go beyond the beyond. Don't get stuck in sympathy. Move on to compassion. The only way you're going to do that is you're going to have to see how everything links to everything else, how I have an effect upon you and you and you. It's kind of like a certain form of a democracy. And how that works might be this. I have the freedom to do whatever I want. But would I do anything I want that would get me what I believe I really want that might hurt you? Now I have to give consideration to my own compassion. Am I really compassionate, or am I just in my philosophy? Am I being philosophic about compassion? I'm not really in compassion. I'm just being philosophic about it. Now you must look at it from a different point of view. You say, where should compassion come from? I fear I have none. You are probably right. It is in the fear that you have none. Compassion comes from a much bigger point of view, and it's not mental, and it's not emotional. Compassion comes from love, real love. And everyone has this beautiful love within them. Everyone. The question is, will I move aside my garbage, my opinions, my fears, my anger? Will I move things along inside me? Will I push beyond the whole idea of my ego? Now, that is a question only you can ask and answer, not me. I know for myself what it is. I know how easy it is to fool myself into thinking I'm doing something I'm really not doing. It can go that way. And if you want it to go that way, if you want to live like that, you certainly can. But it is not helpful to your life. So I say to you, Zach, give up what you want. Give up believing and fearing and thinking and wanting and all the desperate stuff that most of us do. And just ask yourself one simple question. Would I hurt another person intentionally? Would I be willing to hurt myself intentionally? Can I let life, love, live me? Can I let life, love, live me? If you can, you're on your road. if you can't, and you still argue with your logic and reasoning and all the clever arguments my ego and your ego has, then the fear will be there, and you can't love through fear. Please forgive me. Namaste. Can I let love live me? Last question comes from Kay, and I don't know where she comes from. She didn't tell me. I practice yoga. Is it spiritual enough for me to be quote-unquote spiritual? Kay. I don't know, Kay. I don't know. My father did yoga. He wasn't particularly spiritual. He used to do all the asanas and practice and all the postures and things. But he couldn't meditate, and I don't even know what you call spiritual. I'm not even sure I know what I call spiritual anymore. I really don't. I don't look at people and go, oh, you're spiritual. I hear people tell me they're spiritual, but I don't see any in them. I don't see any compassion, forgiveness, kindness, respect. I don't even see that. So, you know, I hear them complain and yawn and think that they're better than, and I hear this all the time. But let me say this about that. That's my Jack Kennedy thing. Let me say this about that. Okay. If you do yoga as a way to avoid meditation and personally encountering yourself and what you are really all about, dealing with your hate and fear, then you're probably not in a practice. And I've never met anyone who did yoga, forgive me, who was in a real authentic practice. They have their philosophy, but they don't encounter anything. Just because you can touch your head, you know, to your toes, doesn't mean you're spiritual. You might be agile. You might be flexible. You might be able to breathe into that flexibility. It seems that yoga is very popular because it's physical. It's like a good place to go if you don't like lifting weights and keeping fit and all that, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's really great. I know guys that take it, and they go there because they like looking at the girls in their tights. You know, a lot of people like that. A lot of my male friends tell me that. And I know a lot of females that do it, and they just love how they look so cutesy in their little tights and their little boobies pushed up and everything. And if you go on Facebook, you see a ton of that all over the place. I'm spiritual because I've got my boobies in the right place, and I'm wearing these tights, and I can touch my head to my toes. It, to me, is kind of a sham. I don't think that's the way yoga was meant to be, but in the West, everything turns to what it turns to. Poop. So, I don't know, Kay, you know, but I like your question because it brings up something I think in a lot of people. One day or another, you're going to have to encounter yourself, and people don't want to do that messy job. They don't really want to encounter themselves. They don't want to go through a process of letting go of passion and emotion and learning how to walk that center line, you know, where you're not in the world, but you're not out of the world. You're not letting the world live in you, but you live in this world. And there's so many arguments about it. In my experience, people who practice yoga are not very good meditators. I found that out. They don't necessarily grasp the situation they're in their life. I found that out. They are kind of hiding and couching behind yoga to appear very spiritual so they can say they are. I've found that out. They don't forgive quickly. They don't forgive at all. They're really no different than any other person I've met, except they can touch their head to their toes and they look very cute in the tights and the boobies thing. So anyway, that's it. Okay. I've gone through the hell and the between heaven and earth and hell and heaven with my practice, and I still can't touch my forehead to my toes. But one thing I do know, I may be a dumb man, but I do know love. And I have a wild sense of humor about it all. So I don't know, honey. You got to figure that out for yourself. One day when you're touching your toes, think of your worst enemy and ask, is touching my toes helping me learn to forgive myself for making that person what they had to become to me. And then I think you'll have your answer. Please forgive me. Namaste. If you have a comment or question, something I might be able to help you with, or you think you'd like to hear on the radio in some way, please come to my website at aspire.org. That's aspire.org, O-R-G. You can go to the main page there. You'll see contact to the upper right-hand corner on the main page. You can click on that, email me, or go to the media, go to radio programs when the little table of contents comes down the menu, and click away. You'll see a little Buddha typing on his computer. It's kind of cute. And you can listen to past radio programs, future radio programs, and you can get a copy of my beautiful series, The Sound of One Hand Clapping, my four-disc set with all eight very important discourses on The Sound of One Hand Clapping. And if you would like to see these programs, I am very happy to tell you they are on our YouTube web channel. If you go to aspire.org, you go down to the very bottom on the main page there, you will see contact, and then you will see Facebook, or I don't know about Facebook. I really don't. And then you'll see Twitter, which would be cool, and you have YouTube. And if you're a YouTube kind of guy or gal, you can watch my TV programs in full right there. Just click on it. And if you become a subscriber and hit the like button, I would be very appreciative. I would. It will help us. And mainly, you'll get the benefit of the programs. And I'm very honored to be able to show them to you and the world. I'm out of here. We'll be back in the air next Saturday and Sunday at 9:04. I hope you will join me. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.